right, thanks, Rob. It's a download here in 720 WGN. Let's reload this week's news. 312-981-7200. In studio with me tonight, very excited to have Kevin Warwick, associate editor at the Chicago Reader. Good to see you, buddy.
Hello, how are you?
Also, we were softball rivals for a long time. And congratulations.
That's the only reason we won the championship last year.
We were out. We took the night job, so wasn't able to play the league anymore. But Kevin, champions. Chicago Reader, still champions.
I do the best I can.
I respect that.
No, you don't. But I do the best I can anyway.
Randy Belisomo, good to see you.
Good evening. Great to see you.
Randy, of course, a reporter on WGN-TV. What's your beat these days? What are your general assignment?
A lot of crime and mayhem. I did do a little Comey a couple days ago, so we're ready to talk about that.
There we go. Well, you know the drill tonight, 312-981-7200. You can text in. You can call. We got biggest story, overreported, underreported, winners, losers. Which story is going to be remembered in 5, 10, 15, 500 years from tonight? We'll start with the biggest story. Randy, what do you got for biggest story of the week?
I think we're all in consensus is that it's Comey and the coverage.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, how could we pick anything else? And I know that you also thought it was overreported, but I don't know if anything else. Nothing else seems to have mattered this week because it's one drama after another. The rationale, I was looking at the New York Times before I came in here, and the conflicting narratives, the great graphic that talks about what has been said and what the reality is. It's hard to keep up.
It really is. I mean, that's to me, the problem with this story and why I have it in overreported as well as biggest is you just get to this point where I'm not even most of the story is trying to unwind what was said, like the cover up, like peeling back the cover, people changing their story. It isn't even about Comey getting fired. I think we've
it's
all decided, we said that's okay, he got fired, but now it's like he said I didn't say it like that, I meant that. It just gets out of control.
I think it's just fascinating more than anything that Trump seems so shocked by the backlash of it all. And untying it is so difficult because of the fact there are sources after sources after sources coming out, just leaking information, which is what he wanted Comey to investigate in the first place, is my understanding. So I've read the Washington Post story like three different times, and literally they have 30 White House officials that are leaking. There's people texting reporters just fireworks emojis. Like when they're asking what's going on, it's just two fireworks emojis. Mm. So, I mean, it's always going to be hard to unravel,
right?
And these stories are just so beautifully, especially Washington Post one, is just so beautifully reported. Four people on it. It's just, I don't know. It's
Randy, incredible. What happens is we get to the point now where it becomes another sort of flashpoint for social media.
You'll
see conservatives on social media say, "Well, I thought Democrats are being hypocrites. We all wanted Comey fired."
Right.
Saying, "Oh, you're just trying to cover it up because of Russia." I mean, we're back. It just feels like we're back. And
because the president's very upset the way Hillary Clinton was treated.
Oh my God!
And so
it is amazing.
Of course, I think it's the flashpoints on social media are. I will say that when we were talking about that when Trump, the Lester Holt interview, which thought was great, when he said he had the private dinner that Comey asked him for, and he was clamoring to have the dinner, and that Trump didn't ask him about personal loyalty, and there have been so many reports about that dinner and who requested what and what was discussed. But from my understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, that there were only two people in the room. So how are we? Who are these anonymous sources, and who's talking? And who? What are we to trust?
Scares you a little bit because you're like, is everything taped? It's like, what's happening?
Maybe.
And then you saw the Twitter came out where he's like, pretty much Trump threatening James Comey, saying, I better not put a tape out.
Has a track record apparently of taping things. In his own
business. FBI director should, right?
Yeah. You should be wildly paranoid.
Very J. Edgar Hoover of us, right?
And Trump. And the president, too. So it's I don't recall any administration or era within an administration where I'm reading in the newspaper so many uses of anonymous sources.
Yeah. And you're right. That is exactly, it seems to be what Trump is very angry with and was angry with Comey, is he wasn't spending enough time figuring out who was putting these leaks out.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also like, I feel like this is almost being underreported, is just the fact that how Jeff Sessions was involved in the whole thing. And basically, it seems to me like Trump had already made the decision, and then he asked Sessions to write a letter to back him up. And it's like, why is Sessions involved in this at all? The guy who recused himself from the investigation.
Right.
I don't know. You get flustered when you're reading stuff. I'm getting flustered right now, and we're like right at the top of it.
And Kellyanne Conway and Sarah Huckabee Sanders have said different things regarding Sessions' memo. Like that, yeah, he didn't request it. He did request it.
And this is the problem. This is why I'm just like you, Kevin. You get frustrated and you feel like it's overreported because it is. Talking heads contradict themselves. The president contradicts the talking heads.
They're just not on the same page.
Nobody's on the same page.
The communications department is getting an hour to prepare before the announcement's made. I mean, poor Sean Spicer. He's such it's fun to troll Sean Spicer. Believe me, I cannot get sick of it, but. I mean,
how do you do that job? Right.
It's a nightmare.
Kevin Warwick, Randy Bellisoma in studio as we talk about the reload this week's news. 312-981-7200. I have a sneaking suspicion that Comey and the firing will come up throughout our categories tonight. Mm-hmm. This story is far from over. All right, let's do this. Let's take a quick break. Stay on time tonight. We'll come back and talk overreported and underreported. It is reloading the news here on The Download. Stay with us. All right, 312-981-7200. We're reloading this week's news. We're on our way to overreported and underreported. Randy Bellisoma from WGN-TV, Channel 9. Kevin Warwick, associate editor at the Chicago Reader. I should say right off the bat, we recuse ourselves from media stories tonight.
But I was so ready for it, though.
You were so ready.
I really was.
Big story at the Reader and Tribune Media this week.
I'm not ready for it.
We're not ready, so we're recusing ourselves in this room. We keep on moving. Let's go to overreported and underreported. Let's start with overreported. Randy, I like yours because the speculation over Sean Spicer kind of was a head spinner.
Right. I just don't think it's the point, and that's exactly what it is. You said it. It's speculation. There was so much talk this week when Sarah Huckabee Sanders showed up in the briefing room to handle the briefings. Oh, does this signal that Spicer's on his way out? Then it was confirmed that he was actually doing his Navy Reserve duty, and there was much ado about nothing. And whether you're on the right or the left, I don't think it matters. If you're on the right, focus on the issues. If you're on the left, the tagline is keep your eye on the ball. And Spicer's future really has nothing to do with it. I just thought it was really gossipy
Kevin,
news
the
coverage.
Internet went crazy. I mean, from memes to everything, there's a lot going on with Sean Spicer.
Yeah, right. I mean, I can't stop looking at the Bush memes.
Those were good.
Hiding in the bushes. Right?
Nah, he was among the bushes.
Among the bushes, right?
That was the correction. Yeah, I mean, it's good fun. Sean Spicer, he's given a job that he cannot win. He's given he's given like an hour to prepare. The communications department's given an hour to prepare after this announcement's made. I mean, he's finally a losing battle. And you saw Melissa McCarthy today. There was a video of her like in her Sean Spicer get up on the podium, just like rolling down in New York City. It's just
aggressively.
I guess for me, and why I agree that it's overreported is I think that stuff is great, and it's great to have a foil. But at the same time, you know, when has this country ever really been that concerned about who the White House spokesperson is? And
name
I get,
the last three.
I know. Carney was in there somewhere. I just remember that. That's
Ari Fleischer.
Fleischer, right. But the idea of this, like, waiting, trying to get every head to spin and every person to fall in the administration and counting on hoping in this sort of Schadenfreude way I hope that Sean Spicer's next. It's kind of gross at the end of the day.
It feels tabloidy.
I mean, I think a lot of people like look to Sean Spicer to just make sense of what Trump says. And I mean, when your president is so nonsensical in his like tweets and speech, and you're looking to him, I mean, it's an impossible task.
Right. Well, definitely the other overreported. Kevin, you have an interesting overreported, which is a little lighter, but I like it.
as a Reds fan that lives in Chicago, I'm really tired of David Ross. I'm tired of David Ross on Dancing with the Stars. I'm tired of David Ross. He's getting a cereal.
He has a cereal, right? Yeah.
You know, he used to play for the Reds. He's played for, I think, every team in baseball five times. And for whatever reason, like when he was on the Cubs, everyone looked at him as a father figure. Randy was talking about, you said something about Anthony Rizzo.
Yeah.
Mentor.
Mentor Anthony Rizzo.
People fell in love with that narrative. The old guy takes care of the younger
player. You know, I know you're a Sox fan, Justin.
Yeah.
So
well, I was just saying this to Pete earlier today. There's this part of me where the one part of Cubdom that I can't, you know, cross the line on is David Ross. And I don't know if it's the Dancing with the Stars or if it's the idea that he's some folk hero. And I said to Pete, I said, yeah, I get it. He hit a home run in Game 7 of the World Series. That's awesome. That's great. So did a couple other players.
Yeah, yeah.
I can lie to you.
So,
but this idea that somehow he's on the Mount Rushmore of Cubs for a season in which he only played when John Lester pitched. Mm-hmm. And, you
he's
know,
not
and,
on the team without John Lester,
yeah,
period.
I agree with you. I feel like it's a little weird, and it's somewhat a little bit disrespectful to some of the other players on that team that were the MVPs of that team that are just, you know, not given cereal boxes. Although Anthony Rizzo does have Rizzos, which, so at least that's fair. He deserves
Bring
that.
David Ross and have him hit some balls into the river and see how far they go. Ooh. If they equal up to Chris Bryant, and we'll be Ooh. Solid.
I mean, part of the problem here, I mean, you know, I guess we see it as well, Randy, because you kind of had it as underreported as we kind of make a shift, that Anthony Rizzo this mm-hmm. week made a huge contribution, charitable contribution to the Lurie's Children's Museum or Children's Hospital, $3.5 million. That was kind
amazingly
of like,
generous.
There wasn't a lot to it.
And as you had said, you know, as a cancer survivor, Anthony Rizzo obviously aligned with the things that he's dealt with, and I know that he's made several visits to take care of the kids there and give them, you know, somebody to look up to. He's been really an attentive hero, really. It's hands-on. But, you know, I was covering when Chance the Rapper made his
right.
donation
to Chicago Public Schools,
CPS, mm-hmm. which was, what did we say, a third of the size?
$1 million.
Right, less than a third of the amount. And I was covering that story for a couple of days. I was covering CPS cookies, which were great cookies. They were very, to benefit CPS. But I understand that was really something for CPS. But Anthony Rizzo gave $3.5 million yeah. to
Children's Cancer Patients. And so, it's so interesting because I guess we respond more to political actions because the Chances was a little bit more political about sure. we're going to give Chicago Public Schools a chance. And Sun-Times had it on the front page like there was no tomorrow on that mm-hmm. story.
And calling Al Rauner.
Yeah, and maybe there's something with the political, and there's no sort of political conflict with giving money to Lurie's.
Right, and Anthony Rizzo didn't, to my understanding, I don't think he held a press conference.
No, the Chance thing was definitely publicized. I mean, that was set up, and more power to Chance.
Yeah,
I like,
absolutely.
Well, Chance the rapper, but,
absolutely.
Yeah, that was more yeah. staged.
Randy Belisomo, Kevin Warwick in studio. We're breaking down this week's news. We just got through the overreported, and we're making a transition into the underreported. We got a lot of great stuff for underreported coming up here. We'll do it after tonight's news from Rob Martier coming up in just a bit. Let's take a break. Stay with us. All right, it's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. We're reloading this week's news, 312-981-7200. Randy Belisomo from WGN-TV. Kevin Warwick from the Chicago Reader. We are right in the thick of it right now. We just did overreported. We're coming up on underreported. I got an underreported one that goes back to presidential politics. And it's a little bit over and under in the way that the day with all the Comey stuff that was happening, The Economist put out an article, an interview with President Trump on the economy. And this was the famed article interview that he said he took credit for, prime the pump. Mm-hmm. So that was overreported in a sense of, look at this. But did you read the rest of that interview? That was all about economy, and it was supposed to be, you know, finance 101 with the Economist. President Trump sounded overmatched. The reporter was suggesting he didn't really know what he was talking about. It just, mm-hmm. I just got to a point where I'm like, I thought this was the stuff you were good at.
It was uncomfortable. And Mnuchin tried to cover. Hope Hicks chimed in, but it just went on and on. And you're right. People in the as Comey, everything was happening, and then Trump did that interview with Lester Holt.
Yeah, right.
Nobody paused, it didn't seem, to really take a look at this Economist interview where they covered a lot of everything about the economy and healthcare. And it was revealing in that he revealed what he didn't know.
That's the problem I had with it. I will always and I don't know, maybe I'm wrong on this, but as someone who has followed Donald Trump, I always assume that he has the utmost confidence and shows it with his ego that he knows what he's talking about when it comes to business and the economy. And in this case, when he was up against, maybe there's a bias in The Economist, and I don't really know what their politics are. Perhaps maybe they were setting him up and whatever. They just were not buying his spin, and he didn't really find his way out. If you thought the quote about prime the pump was bad, which was where he's like, I thought of this. This makes sense. Does it not make sense to you? The rest of the interview is almost incomprehensible.
But that's more people were talking about prime the pump, though. I mean, this is the underreported part of it, is like he's trying to spin it out because he doesn't know what he's talking about. Like, put him in any interview, like the Face the Nation interview with John Dickerson, like where Dickerson, you know, pushed him about, are people going to be covered? Yeah. Are people who
pre-existing
conditions
right.
going to be covered? And he just doesn't know how to get out of it unless he has his desk and he can just sit behind it. And then Dickerson's just standing there.
One of the best moments in television history.
And then his staff, they try to help him get out of it because he was asked about releasing the tax returns yet again. And he changed the tune. He said, well, maybe I'll release them when I'm finished because I'm very proud of them. Actually, I did a good job. Hope Hicks, communication advisor, chimes in. He'll release them once the audit is over. And then the president says, no, I might release them when I'm out of office. So she tried to set him up.
Right.
But
it goes back to the beginning of our conversation with the biggest story, just this concept of not being on the same page. Mm-hmm. And in this case, I mean, they were talking about NAFTA. They were talking about the things that are the buzzwords that are going around. And I really dug in because I was like, okay, this would be interesting to see exactly what he's talking about when he wants to dismantle or renegotiate, quote unquote, NAFTA. And I just didn't really think that he had a grasp, and The Economist didn't think so either. So that's my underreported.
Right.
What do you guys got for underreported?
Oh, I thought they had one.
Yeah. Mine is a completely different wavelength. I cover music for the Chicago Reader, and yesterday on a closed Facebook message board called DIY Chicago, there was an accusation to a band called Powerbottom, which is a queer punk band that is playing Subterranean in a couple weeks. I don't know the exact days, but both those shows are sold out. They're building up their fan base very quickly. Mm-hmm. And one of the members, it's a duo, Ben Hopkins, was accused of predatory sexual misconduct. And they came back and made a statement that was in so many words like, this is not something that we know of, Ben. No survivors have come forward. So it created a quick, very interesting discussion just on like via Pitchfork, Stereogum, mm-hmm. AV Club, and just how it disseminated so fast. And Bandcamp's managing editor, Jess Skolnick, who is great, wrote a Medium post just about the idea of, basically the idea of accountability if there are no survivors.
Yeah,
like,
right.
Just because there isn't a survivor doesn't mean you're not accountable.
Or
you should not hold yourself accountable. So, like, and she went through a series of steps just to do that, just to kind of explain that. It's just an interesting story.
Well, you cover music. I mean, my first reading the story or talking to you about it, I mean, the first thing I think about when I think of, I mean, I don't know what the misconduct is. But a lot of musicians write best-selling autobiographies mm-hmm. on their sexual misconduct. Mm-hmm. I mean, you think of the rock bands from the 70s and 80s, and I'm not condoning it, but, I mean, we've had some of the authors even on here, I mean, talking about how crazy it was and Sunset Strip. I mean, there is an allure, there's an attraction, there's a strange, almost acceptable behavior when it comes to rock music and sex.
Luckily, there's a more forward-thinking kind of society now, I feel like, with music.
So society's turning, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Like, especially, with music, because it's happened a few different times, I can't think off the top of my head, where singers, you know, are accused of sexual misconduct, bands drop off tours, and the band just straight folds. They can't get out of it, you know? And it seems like this is in the process of happening. The waves mm-hmm. are kind of coming right now. One of the artist that was supposed to be on the tour is a local artist named Namdi Ogbenaya. He dropped off the tour, and the other opening band dropped off the tour. So it's like, I'm not going to be surprised if a month from now the band just folds. Because
is that a good thing for art? and music. Look at all the things that, I'm just devil's advocate. All the things we would have never heard, read, or saw if there had been the same enforcement of virtue.
I think it is incredibly important to hold yourself accountable, regardless of whether survivors come forward. So this band's, you know, they were upfront and they addressed it immediately. So they put a post out and, you know, in kind of an offbeat sort of way, kind of said there hadn't been any survivors coming forward, but it's kind of a discussion about where accountability lies.
Yeah,
I mean, that doesn't make you necessarily unaccountable just because no one's speaking up about it. So you need maybe a friend to come in and mediate. You know, it's a complicated process.
Well, it's interesting, and we'll see how it plays out, especially, you know, in that community, and specifically, you know, if that band, like you said, is going to fold, or how, if they see what happens in the next couple of weeks.
Sure, yeah.
Randy, your underreported story that you sent, which I think I kind of agree, is this the concept. We saw this last week with the shooting of the police officers down in back of the yards, right? The mistaken identity is what it turned out to be. They didn't know that it was police officers, quote unquote. That's how the story kind of played out, right?
Right.
But it was the what really grabbed everyone's attention and isn't being talked about was the style in which it happened and these, I guess you'd say, military-style weapons that are showing up in gang fights.
In a 5-day stretch in one district, 13 people were shot with military-style rifles. Some people, I think it's not the correct terminology, people know them as assault rifles, AK-47s, AR-15s. And this is happening this week and in this month, and people aren't talking about it. I don't know if it's the new normal. It's tragic. But, you know, I remember in 2013 covering that story of when 13 people were shot in a park. I think it was in the near southwest side. And I remember the entire city was up in arms. An assault right in a park and 13 people. And this is happening. 13 people have been shot this month with the same kind of weapon. And we just keep on going. The Chicago police say that there's not a spike overall in the use of that kind of weapon, but it certainly feels like in the month of May, and you know, it's who knows what the summer is going to bring.
This week I think it was the anniversary. It was 200 people killed killed or shot. I can't remember. I think it's killed.
Yeah.
But then the story becomes. That's five less than last year. We're down, and there. I mean, it. You do get a desensitized kind of feel, and to find out that you know this is sort of bubbling up, this idea of military style weapons on the streets of Chicago, and without even pause. Meaning, it's not like you said. We're not even. Oh my God! Why was that gun used? We're like,
we move to the next story.
We're moved to the next story.
And I know that the police say that they have seized almost 80 of those weapons in 2017, and that's just a slight increase, apparently not a really big deal. But 194 people have been murdered. So, you know, the violence is the same. It just shows that we've grown more accustomed to it.
Well, let's take a break, because when I come back, I want to talk about winners and losers. One of the winners I had this week was Alderman Lopez, the 15th Ward, who had a gang shooting at a memorial and stepped up and said, you know what, at least innocent people didn't get hurt. And that really riled up his community because, you know, several people were shot and killed in that shooting. But he stood by it. And he talked about, no, I chose my words carefully.
Wow.
And it's, you know, and that is something, and he had a gang threat and the police had to secure. So let's talk about that, because that's when you start seeing aldermen stepping up to gangs and maybe there's a change in the way that, you know, politics and street crime is playing out. We'll talk about that. Randy Bellisomo, Kevin Warwick in studio. We're reloading this week's news. 312-981-7200. Stay with us. Reloading this week's news, 312-981-7200. Randy Bellisomo, Kevin Warwick in studio. We are right now on winners. As I mentioned, Alderman Lopez of the 15th Ward speaking out about gang activity in his ward. There was a terrible shooting where gang members were alleged gang members. I don't know. They were having a memorial for one of the victims.
Mm-hmm.
And in that, they were shot by a rival gang. And when I believe it was DNA Info reached out to the alderman said, well, no one innocent was caught. God forbid, you know, essentially, well, no innocent children. I think he said children or anyone.
Lives
were lost or, you know, hurt by this. And the community around was like, how could you say that? People were shot and killed. I don't know what the numbers were. And then when they came back to him, he reiterated. He said, no, I stand by my words. He became sort of a folk hero in the way that so often gangs aren't called out like that. And he essentially made a distinction between the gang and members of his community. And it was somewhat startling and I will say somewhat refreshing. You don't hear politicians do that. And I don't know if he did it out of sort of being a rookie and he didn't know that, you know, he hasn't learned how to speak around the issues yet, or if he was, you know, trying to make a name for himself. Yeah. I don't know.
It was almost Trumpian because he was called and he just gave his opinion. And he did not subscribe to the standard, I don't know if the word's politically correct, narrative we are very careful at Channel 9, as we should be, about saying innocent life, guilty life. Oh, right. It was just that in alleged. Colloquial Chicago.
Right. Yeah,
oh, it's just another gangbanger who got shot. Well, still, we cover it's somebody's son, somebody's brother, somebody cares.
It's a human being,
and
right.
So, and it's a tragedy when anybody is killed. And for the new alderman to just say it like maybe it's said in the neighborhood, it piqued my attention.
It rose to the ranks of 10 o'clock news, where I don't think it would have otherwise.
And it wasn't planned. I mean, he didn't give a press conference.
What do you think, Kim?
I think Randy touched on it. The fact that it wasn't planned, there was no filter for him to run it through. And I think as a rookie, he's choosing a side. He's choosing a line, and he's stepping over it. And while it might seem brash to us, it is brash. I mean, straight up. But I don't know. It's tough, man. It's a slippery slope.
Like, yeah, you're talking about human beings.
You're just talking about people shooting into a crowd, and I don't know. I think I want to say 3 people were killed. I feel like I can't remember, but it's tough.
And now he has bodyguards, 24/7.
Now he's got political. I mean, and part of it was he's got police detail because there's a credible gang threat.
They want
to take him out, and you're just like, what is happening?
He called him out for taunting the other gang. You know, it's tough.
Well, the other winner, I mean, let's talk about winners. Who do you have for winners?
Melanie Glinowitz. Melody Glinowitz.
Great story, yeah.
You're right. So the widow of Lieutenant Joe Glinowitz, who staged his own, he staged his suicide to look like a homicide in the line of duty because he was taking money from the Police Explorers Youth Program, and now his widow is charged with money laundering and conspiracy and misusing the charitable funds and using the money that he took for the Police Explorer Youth Program to take care of personal expenses like vacations, his online porn, body waxing, and they were living paycheck to paycheck, and she got ahead on some things.
It's one of the most surreal, damaging stories in Illinois history.
And so there were so many... we understand text messages, communication, emails back and forth about the money.
There was incriminating evidence in text messages.
Right. And then there's a court hearing this week that I covered for Channel 9 in which the defense attorney wanted to have these thrown out of the evidence. And I think that is the crux of the prosecutor's case against her. And the judge said, yeah, we can't allow this.
Because,
and he said, this goes back to common law. It's upheld by the Supreme Court, the state of Illinois. The communication between husband and wife, Judge Boris said, is sacred. And the prosecution said that, you know, text message is not like a conversation or a letter. It's a text message. And they tried to create this new special class. The text messages wouldn't fall into the protected communication, the spouse testimonial privilege. But Judge Boris said, this is the modern world. This is the way we communicate.
That could be a case of precedent, too.
Right. Yeah, that's why I think it's really important.
Wow.
And so that is, you cannot come between, and you know, a wife cannot testify against her husband in law. And so that was thrown out. There was also a motion to dismiss the case entirely. What's going to happen now is that that the prosecution on June 13th is going to present the remainder of whatever evidence they have. I'm not sure what that is. And then the judge is going to decide whether to on that motion to dismiss the case against her on June 13th. She might walk.
That's an unbelievable.
Just the fact that there's, you know, something more to the story. It's just like building and building.
I mean, what a story. I mean, it just continues. I remember we were here. I remember that happening on air when all that was happening. And yeah, geez. Mm-hmm. The, I will say Pat Quinn's a winner.
Nice portrait.
Because he got a portrait. You know, how often, I mean, if I get a portrait in any given week, I'm like, I'm a winner.
And it's an interactive portrait.
Oh, man.
He's got the purple tie. It looks good.
Yeah.
The other, and I guess it's a feel-good story, and I think about the woman from River Forest who was lost in the, was it Montana Woods or Glacier Park? I forgot where exactly it was. 6 days, and she was found healthy.
What was she doing?
Remarkable. She was walking with her dog. She went swimming and lost her way, and then her and the dog were on their own with no food for 6 days. That's the reason I say she's a winner. Is that story, and you know this, Randy, 99.999% of the time does not work out that way.
Mm-hmm.
And for her to come out unscathed except a little bit hungry is
remarkable. I cannot believe when that happened. And then the news that the woman that was missing from Schaumburg was found dead. The dichotomy there, but that I could not believe, the woman who was in the woods for a week. So, yeah, she's a winner.
Dog lovers, man.
Kevin Warwick, Randy Bellisomo. All right, let's come back and do the losers, right?
Cool.
We have not. How is it that we're to an hour into this thing and we have not talked about Springfield?
Good.
We have not talked about Chicago Public Schools and the announcement that they're $596 million in the hole for this year? We haven't talked about Steve Harvey?
That's what I want to talk about.
Dude, you are right, Randy. This is quite a week for news. Reloading, 312-981-7200. What are we missing here? Let us know. Thanks, Rob. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. We're reloading this week's news. 312-981-7200. Randy Bellisomo from WGN-TV. Kevin Warwick, the associate editor at the Chicago Reader. Let me get to some of these pieces. We got winner for sure on the woman who was rescued. But this is from 630. But the recovery, search, and rescue missions are extremely expensive. And when I lived in Yellowstone for an internship for the summer, if somebody got lost and they were ignorant, they were supposed to be personally charged for the recovery and rescue.
Oh, wow.
I want to know what the charge is, because it seems completely reasonable for me to pay someone if I'm rescued from death.
Yeah.
Be like, hey, yeah.
Is it $50?
Yeah. It's probably more than 50.
What's your life worth?
All right. Another 630 says, winner Patty Vasquez here at WGN Radio for getting her interview with Mike Madigan. Oh. And that might be a nice little transition, you know, because we haven't really talked about Springfield yet. Springfield heating up. An abortion bill made it through the Senate this week, so now it's going to go to Governor Rauner's desk. And I kind of have both Rauner and Madigan this week in the loser category. They find themselves there a lot just based on the fact that we still don't have a state budget. Bruce Rauner goes to Chicago State University. Weird call.
Yeah.
Gets booed. Which,
shocking.
Yeah, I think it makes me feel like it was some sort of play. You don't know that was going to happen, and why would you accept
why?
That? Yeah.
And why did Chicago State, why did the invitation take, was it extended? The same thing that happened in the college in Florida, why was the invitation extended to Betsy DeVos?
Oh, I mean good clip.
Yeah,
you knew that wasn't going to go over well. Mm-hmm.
And you just so wonder, bizarre. There's something else there that's not being talked about. Why Governor Rauner is at the commencement for Chicago State University is a head scratcher. Mm-hmm. But also, you know, as we continue down the road, it sounded this week, State Senator John Cullerton, State Senate President John Cullerton says, I throw my hands up. on this grand bargain. Every time I try to go somewhere, Governor Rauner stops it. Governor Rauner's people and Governor Rauner himself say, hey, you know, I just want the bet. For far too long, it's been broken. And the rhetoric continues, and we go back and forth. Cullerton said, they're done. Democrats have nothing else to give. Do you believe that, Randy?
I don't think it's going anywhere. And that's what I was going to say, going back to the winners. I think a winner seems to be J.B. Pritzker, because his rollout on television seems to have been incredibly positive. I just saw a story in the Sun Times about how he saved a couple hundred million in taxes by allowing the property next to his to fall into disrepair. I mean, he won personally and I think politically this week. And right. So I don't know if he's the man that the Democrats are looking for, but he seems to be this week be on a roll.
You know, Natasha Kurecki had in her political, what they put out for Politico in the morning, Illinois Politico, a point that I thought nobody's talking about. Maybe it fits into losers as well as underreported. J.B. Pritzker, you know, not necessarily, you know, the trade unions have lined up for him. AFL-CIO's next, and they're kind of right there on the edge. And falling down the same patterns of what we saw in the general election for 2016 for president, where Hillary Clinton was anointed before a primary did it for her. And here they go again. The Democrats, there were talk about in the article, had they learned their lesson? Is Mike Madigan pushing too hard to get J.B. Pritzker in place when you have Chris Kennedy and Daniel Biss and others?
I haven't heard Chris Kennedy's name in a week.
But it gives Chris Kennedy a win in the sense that now he can play, and it just sounds so crazy, but the Bernie Sanders kind of role of the machine Democrats want to anoint a winner.
I'm the machine
Democrats will anoint that winner,
yeah.
though.
Like, yeah, but at the same time, does it weaken a candidate when they have this kind of argument and then it gets to the general and you're like, well, they didn't even want. I mean, I thought it really weakened Hillary Clinton that there was.
She was
and Donald Trump used it. I used it all the way up saying Bernie Sanders would have beat her. They didn't even let her. I mean, are they running the same risk that they ran in 2016 by trying to sort of jump in front of the primary?
I haven't thought about it that
right?
way.
Isn't that
that's a
good
very
point.
Good observation. Yeah. And then watch out because Alderman Poir, you know, the money's not there, but he has a very loyal following of people that think that he is honest as the day is long. And he is playing up the humble origins, immigrant family, it's about what you give back to society, not what you take, narrative that I think will appeal to a lot of people when you're looking at two billionaires.
Right.
I really think at the end of the day, I mean, this gives Chris Kennedy an identity. We all thought Chris Kennedy at a certain point would be the Rauner Kennedy when he came out. And you're like, okay, so it's going to be millionaires against each other.
Right.
And then J.B. Pritzker got in. You're like, okay, so millionaires against each other in the primary for the millionaires. But he can rebrand himself in a way that he's I'm the outsider. I'm a Kennedy. I'm an outsider. I'm not an Illinois machine. And if it doesn't go his way, meaning if Madigan gives the money to Pritzker and it just goes that way, there's a lot of disdain for Speaker Madigan, even among his own party, you know, Democrats on the north side of Chicago. So you just wonder at a certain point, like, are they setting themselves up for drama that didn't need to be there?
An election's a long way away.
It's a long way away. Really? That's so true. It's May. All right.
2017.
Loser, Chicago Public Schools, $596 million in the hole. A texter just texted in saying, how many students are there that they could be that much money in the hole for the last month? Now, this story is awesome because it's not $600 million. It's smoke and mirrors. There's block grants, and I didn't know this, that block grants from the state, their state is supposed to pay the school by the end of the year at some point, all districts.
Okay.
The state is late. As they are late with everything. And so I don't know if it's CPS, if it's the CFO, Carol Brown,
Karen Lewis.
The CFO for the city. If she's just throwing that number out, but they're trying to make it, I don't know if they're trying to make it a bigger number. And they went back to Rauner, and Rauner said, ask the comptroller. She's the one in charge of who
delivering
gets the money.
The payment.
So she's almost blaming it. He's saying it's a fake crisis. They're creating a crisis. The money is there, but they're trying to make it like it's a big deal to make the Republicans in Springfield pay up.
So who's the loser in the story?
I guess us.
But for being duped by the story.
But I mean, the one thing that still stands out is it's around $200 million that they need to find. Taxpayers are going to be on the hook for it.
And we got to go back to chance.
Right.
Go back to
times
chance.
It by 200. Exactly. Or Anthony Rizzo.
But I mean, do you? I mean, what do you think of the CPS stuff? I mean, this dance that's been playing out and it continues to play out. Now the number's gotten so big.
Every year. I feel like I'm here every year.
I know.
Talking
just
about this. So
by it anyway,
it is.
Keep twirling.
I think that you know there was rumors that you know that school is going to end early. That I don't think that that's going to happen. Every time they find the way out, and so I am not. I don't get as alarmed as I used to get, and maybe I'm just jaded.
Okay, no, I base my alarm on my neighborhood crossing guard and how alarmed she is.
Oh, what does she say?
She thinks everything's going to be fine.
See?
So, right, I mean, she's been working
the corner
for like 30
one more
years.
Out, and I don't know where I saw this, but Mayor Emanuel, in an interview this week, and this is all about words, right? Mm-hmm. He said, we're going to have to make some hard decisions. And the last time he used that phrasing when it was for schools, they closed 50 schools, and mm-hmm. it was the biggest in American history. The question is, do you see Chicago Public Schools, who can recognize, I think, that the budget they have right now is unsustainable?
He can't do that.
He still
wants
when
to
he
run
closed,
for reelection.
But when he closed the 50 schools, they even made it clear saying, there has to be more. I mean, people came out, economists at that point said there have to be more. This 50 is not going to make a difference.
He has tried so hard to re-ingratiate himself into the impacted communities that to do that again, that takes some hubris.
I guess it's the question of whether or not he has re-ingratiated himself.
No, but it doesn't stop, I don't think.
But I'll be devil's advocate on that. As a taxpayer, and my bill goes up and up and up as a taxpayer in Chicago, if it's not sustainable to have as many schools as they have, and they can assure me that students are still getting the right amount of education, I don't have a problem with them closing schools. Now, where it got political is where they closed the schools. Mm-hmm. That's the problem where you're like, wait a second, this disproportionately affects black and brown populations. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But the idea of
assault rifles on the streets.
The downsizing schools, I mean, if there are two schools that are close to each other, close one of them, make it the... I mean, I'm just saying, I'm not...
Economics.
I'm not saying that it should play out the way it played out, and this is just a hypothetical conversation. Sure. But I don't know if I'd be against downsizing Chicago public schools if in June we have a $600 million hole. You know what I mean?
The population of the city is declining.
Yeah.
So that
hard decision to make.
True.
It's not an easy job for the mayor, but and also the other thing that was awesome this week is there seems to be some strife between Mayor Emanuel and CPS head Forrest Claypool. So,
I didn't notice that.
Yeah, there was I know. I feel like I've been catching these little glimpses there. They may be mad at each other. So there you go. Some good politics. All right, we didn't even get to Steve Harvey. Let's do that. Let's take a break, and then we'll just spend the next 8 minutes on Steve Harvey. Does that sound good?
Yeah.
Kevin Warwick, Randy Bonasomo. We're reloading this week's news. Stay with us. Randy Bonasomo. Kevin Warwick. We're reloading this week's news here. 312-981-7200. One of the biggest stories. I guess we put in the loser category for everybody. We had to read it. We had to pay attention to it, but it was delicious. Steve Harvey, the comedian who does the show, The Steve Harvey Show, here at the NBC Tower. Today was his last, Thursday was his last day. He's moving the show. He relocated it to Los Angeles. In doing so, Rob Feeder, who just signed up with the Daily Herald, reported that he's not bringing any of his staff from Chicago to L.A.
Why do you think that is?
Yeah, right. And the staff may have retaliated with a leak of a memo at the beginning of the season in which Steve Harvey, in a delightfully, I don't even know, it's just delightful to watch the meanness, I guess, in the memo, says, don't talk to him in the hallways. Don't come up to me. Don't come up to my dressing room, make an appointment. If I'm in the chair doing makeup, don't talk to me. Essentially tells his staff to leave him alone. He's looking for more free time. Strangest memo I've ever read.
I'm seeking more free time for me. I promise you I will not entertain you in the hallway. Don't attempt to walk with me.
Right.
And, you know, he didn't want to even show up to the staff party.
And then today, after all of this plays out, Rob Feeder puts it in his column. It goes crazy viral. There's nothing I liked more this week than watching Rob fight with people on Twitter to get to, like, 22-year-old kids from BuzzFeed to get proper attribution. That was my favorite thing, just watching.
That's like, just not going to, I mean, I understand him fighting for it.
It was great.
Journalism.
Yeah. Great. Old but he's school. Going for not going to happen.
But he got it. They would be like, oh, because they know they're in the wrong. Yeah, yeah. They're like, my bad. But more importantly, I mean, to watch how the Hollywood rags kind of picked it up, everyone, you know, the big, I mean, it's just tons and tons of traffic coming through this story about Steve Harvey in Chicago. What do you guys think of this? I mean, this has been water cooler talk all week.
It's a non-story. That's a story because the Hollywood rags picked it up. I mean, I understand the memo is callous, straight up, and you know he doesn't want to be pestered. I think some of it plays with Chicago. Chicago doesn't have a lot of celebrity television shows. Right. Celebrities like milling around. People get starstruck. People bring their cousins in to meet Steve Harvey. I'm sure he just got tired of it. I'm not by any means like defending him, but.
And you could see if he really did have that problem, Randy, if he was in the hallways and every time someone
feel the
tried
same
to
way. No, we get you get these messages at work. I get these messages at work. If there's a big star in the building, please don't bother them. I think that it is a story because I felt a lot of empathy for the guy. I was like, that's just a nice guy when he screwed up the Miss Universe pageant, you know, and he was so apologetic and he was making jokes about himself. And then he takes himself so seriously that he's seeking free time for, quote unquote, me. I mean, aren't we all? But I just thought he was Mr. Nice Guy, and you can't judge somebody by one email. But that was pretty
I had the
strong.
I had the great privilege of accidentally stumbling upon his show this morning, and he had his radio show, and right at the right time, and he was going on a 7-minute rant about this. He does the show live from Los Angeles, like it's a show that's syndicated.
Is it just him?
He's got a crew around.
Okay.
And he went in. He was like, he talked a lot about the Bible. Mm-hmm. He talked about being God's soldier. He talked about
relevant.
The idea that. One Bible passage about no weapon shall be used against me. He said all these people trying to take me down, but what they don't recognize is God's my dude, and he's got me covered.
That's in Psalms.
Yeah, right. But I mean, he really went. He talked about Rob Feeder by name. He said, I wish he would have reached out to me. I'm not sure what that would have done.
Do you think Steve Harvey's not going to comment on something?
And then he talked about, you know, just the idea that all things come to an end, and he loved some of his staff in Chicago. And then he said, you know, for some, it's the end. Yeah, losing this job means you might be a new beginning.
He's doing them a favor.
Yeah. I mean, it was a very strange monologue he did at the end of his show.
Right.
And with a lot of God soldier stuff in there. But I was like, I was surprised he took that much time out. But it obviously affected him, and he was talking about it. He was ripping on Variety. He really went after Variety because they were, I guess they picked up the story too.
Because
so he just was like, who's my
friends?
Kind of thing. So. what a great story this is.
It's delicious. When God, you know, closes one door, I think, you know, Revelation says that he opens a window.
Yeah, right. Look at that. See,
God's
we can do that
dude.
Here too.
Yeah, so his staff, they're gonna go on to bigger and better things.
There you go. Randy Bellisomo, Kevin Warwick. Here's what we're gonna do. We'll take a quick break, we'll get the news. You guys come back for a little bit more. We'll do what sucked us down the rabbit hole and what story is gonna be remembered in 5, 10, 15, 500 years from now. Sound good?
Sure.
All right, so download. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob. All right, Kevin Warwick, Randy Bellisomo. We're reloading this week's news, 312-981-7200. 847 Sue from Glenview. She says, why am I supposed to care about the Steve Harvey email, especially when we don't know what precipitated it? Mm. Well, I agree. Absolutely. And there could be I'm at my wit's end. That's how it felt.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, reading it, you're like, that's some harsh stuff to put in a memo. Mm-hmm. As I kind of joked about yesterday or the day before, you ain't got a deputy for that.
Right.
You don't have somebody who's like, I'll take care of it, Steve.
Right.
You know, and they go
He's
around.
He's above that.
Yeah. Well, he doesn't need to get it. Let me get my email up. Let me get my Outlook up. I'm going to send these guys a memo. So, yeah.
Right.
All right. So let's move on to what sucked us down the rabbit hole this week. There's a lot of good stuff. Kevin, why don't we start with you? Media, obviously, Chicago media, a big, big week for Chicago media.
Yeah. Well, I work at the Chicago Reader, which we authorized a strike today, which does not mean we are striking, but there is an authorization for a strike.
We'll clear that up, because that does confuse people. So that means you could do it at any time.
Yes, that's it. Okay. I mean, that's basically it.
It doesn't mean there's a strike on Monday. It just means you now have authorized, you've filed the paperwork, whatever has to be done.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. There was a unanimous vote held, 17-0, to authorize a strike. So that just means basically it's on the table. It can happen, at whenever.
And not unlike with Randy and I, who really can't talk about, WGN or Tribune Media in any form, I would assume this really comes out of the fact that it's been a year or so of negotiations.
Over two, man.
Mm. Over 2 years. Yeah, yeah. I'm just assuming that you can't really tell us what's going on in the negotiations.
No, I can't. And I don't know.
I gotta ask.
Yeah, yeah. it's been a struggle. So this is by no means, it's a last resort thing, to strike. But it was a measure that had to be done, so that they, take us seriously as something that we might do. So.
And then as an assistant editor, I mean, you're part of the,
Randy,
associate
editor.
Oh, excuse me.
Right. So, associate editor. I didn't think that management was part. I consider that a management position, but not.
Now we're getting into weeds.
No.
You're among the people.
I'm among the people. Yeah. There are management positions.
Basically. And the other the I mean, it was amazing this week at the. I get the courage of the Chicago Reader staff. I mean, you put it up on a window. The staff of everybody's salaries.
Yeah,
that went viral in the sense that everyone could see what everyone makes. It's a very good tactic because you guys are way underpaid to be doing the kind of work that you've been doing at the Reader. And I think everybody looking at it, with layman just looking, is like, "What? I didn't know that. I didn't know Ben Jarofsky made that much money. Not that much money."
Yeah, it's a. Yeah, it's a severe tactic, something that we then take lightly. Some people then put their salaries up there. It was their choice. We were happy to see the response that I got. It was pretty much an outrage response. So, it's a rigmarole for sure.
Good luck.
For anyone who wants to see it, I mean, I'll just give you a quick take. Kevin makes $1.5 million. He's trying to get to $1.8 million.
Yeah, I tried to stay off the wall. But
it's, yeah, no,
there's a Save the Chicago Reader Facebook page if anybody wants to learn more about it and a movement.
And the other big story, of course, concerning Randy and I, the Tribune Media sold to Sinclair, a company out of Baltimore.
Right.
It's a big story, too. The Chicago Tribune, surprisingly, our former colleagues, we're not the same company anymore.
Mm-hmm.
A couple editorials. Eric Zorn did one. Mary Schmeek did one. The editorial, just talking about the idea of being Chicago owned, mm-hmm. and what's lost when we lose Chicago owned things. I'm not sure that. I mean, there was some robust discussion around that. It's a lot of craft beer discussion, but
yeah, I mean, it does seem to me like the discussion is more about just the decentralization of Chicago owned the spreading out of Chicago, what is Chicago owned media landscape wise kind of now?
And the landscape of media that it's so coastal. New York, LA, or in Baltimore, in Sinclair's case, is that we discussed this. If you link it back to the election, we talked about how the media was all conglomerates were all on far flung cities, and there was nothing in the middle of the country, the southern part of the country, and it lost a lot of coverage of not really being in touch with their markets. Yeah. And then missed the biggest story that's happened in, modern political times. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what impact it will have, but I think it says something when the power of media is all in one place.
Right. Randy, what's your story that sucked you down the rabbit hole this week?
We were talking about this professor at in my hometown of Memphis at Rhodes College wrote an article that is turned into an academic freedom versus
freedom of speech.
Freedom of speech versus, for lack of a better word, woke progressive political thought and what you cannot say and should not say. And she wrote a paper that was published in a liberal feminist journal about transracialism. Yeah, right. And she would be on the side of, she calls herself a staunch advocate for the rights of the LGBTQ community, but she wrote, it was a philosophical academic paper. It was peer reviewed and published by a journal after two people, signed off on it in her profession, and that said that if a man can become a woman or vice versa, then why couldn't Rachel Dolezal become African American? Right. And that was published, and social media went up ballistic. In arms, and that there are certain things you cannot say. I don't care if you're academic, I don't care if you're in research, right. that you cannot talk about that. And then what was remarkable, that sucked me down the rabbit hole, that the journal retracted it after it published it, and didn't just retract it, but issued an apology that said that the article, it was not only not well done, but it, quote, enacted violence and perpetuated harm for all sorts of reasons. And they said that it was an act of violence to publish that academic article.
Yeah, it's really about language. A lot of this was about comparing the transgender community, mm-hmm. and how you can change gender,
mm-hmm.
so why can't you change race? Mm-hmm. That was really the premise of it. And but where that got caught up and where it really became a explosive conversation on social media was about the buzzwords, the language that the author used. She was using the wrong types of language descriptors. There was one point where she referenced Caitlyn Jenner, and she said Bruce.
Yeah, right.
And that's a no-no in the trans world, where you're not supposed to, talk about the original name. So there was a lot, and so you can understand a little bit, especially at the academic level, because when it bubles up to pop culture or to articles in mainstream media,
right.
We rarely know the right way to say something. I mean, you find that all the time. So I can understand why they'd be upset with an academic researcher,
right.
who didn't get the terminology right. But the part going further and retracting and everything, it seemed way more about shutting down the thought of this,
right.
over just language.
Right. Yeah. I think that no matter what side you're on, that has a lot of precedent, because that is the one place that you are supposed to have freedom to explore whatever you want. But we in the mainstream media to be knowing what's going on in a liberal feminist philosophy journal, the whole world's discombobulated.
All right, that's my rabbit hole story was in the Sun-Times. Great piece about the gang watch list, or the watch list that has been talked about by the Chicago Police Department for years now, since Eddie Johnson's term. Whenever there's any situation that there's a shooting or something and a suspect, the police department says, well, we have a list, and this guy's on the list. And the media after a while is like, can we see this list? How many people are on this list? Where are you getting the numbers for this list? And they're mm-hmm. like, well, it's private. Mm-hmm. You can't see it. The Sun-Times sued the Chicago Police Department. They won. They got the list. The startling thing about the list, that's 1,400 people or so, is yes, it's going to have a majority of known gang members.
Right.
But there were times, and it wasn't just one time, it was a significant number, 10, 15, I can't remember what it was, where they didn't have a charge. They didn't go to jail. They weren't necessarily affiliated to a gang, yet their name showed up on it. I'm not saying that they're innocent people, but the concept of the algorithm, and that became the question that the Sun-Times asked, what's the algorithm that you're using? Because it's computer-generated to get this list. Mm-hmm. It's not like a commander, in a district is going, I'm going to write down Kevin Warwick. right. Like there's an algorithm that a computer is playing. So how do you do that? That still hasn't been figured out. And then they talked to, and this was where the article is really great, and this is the rabbit hole part.
Mm-hmm.
They talked to the guy who created the algorithm, the computer program.
Okay,
right?
They did talk to the guy then.
And he said, I didn't design it to create a watch list. I designed it for victims. It was a different, that's a whole different side, the idea of being able to generate algorithm. I can tell who's going to be a victim, all this kind of stuff. Go ahead.
Okay, you're riveted.
I am. So they created it to predict victims?
I think it's a predictive, or they were able to know where the victims were, like you were able to map and able to do that stuff.
Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah. But the point is, the idea that it's being used to ascend, it reminds me of the movie Minority Report, and the idea that I can tell who's going to commit a crime before they do. And what if they get it wrong? And in the case, and I think that's what the Sun-Times is kind of poking around at, there are some people on this list that don't have criminal charges, don't have gun charges, don't have affiliations to gangs. you're not using the algorithm in the same way that it was intended, are you running the risk of civil liberties issues where yes. Kevin Warwick and Randy Bellisomo show up on the list? And that's a private list. It's not like it's public and you can defend yourself in any form. Right. And now you're in the crosshairs of the Chicago police. I think it's fascinating. I don't necessarily know that it's going to go that route. And, you know, we're going to have a futuristic Tom Cruise vehicle on our hands. But
it's a fun thought.
But it's a fun, I mean, it's, but it's, don't you think it's interesting?
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yes. Especially the disparity between the 1,400 people that the problem and 400,000. I mean, that is huge.
Right.
Everybody should be talking about it.
It's crazy.
Yeah. So I don't know what that means. And if that means that the idea, because there has been a lot. I mean, the police have pointed to this list. You know, the list every time they can. And it feels like a positive
because they
thing.
Because they knew the list was private under a lock.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I get the idea of keeping it private. I understand the concept. You don't want it to be public so someone can go look and see if they're on it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it is a head-scratcher when the media gets it. And the media protected the names. But, you know,
truly.
They were able to look and see cross-section and, you know, the idea that that's playing out. That's a little scary.
It is.
All right, there we go. All right, let's wrap it up, shall we? Let's do our last category tonight. This is the one. This
what
is the
it?
One.
Are we all just going to go back to what we were talking about at the beginning of the show?
I know, right? No, that's good. All right, so the big story, this is how we wrap it up tonight. Which story will be remembered from this week in 6 months, in a year, in 5 years, in 10, in 15, in 50, in 500 years? What story from this week will we all remember as a society? Randy Bellisomo.
I hope we don't remember it, but I feel like we have taken the eye off the ball in the past five days for what's going on in North Korea. And North Korea is going forward with nuclear weapons testing, and the United States says we're going to use military action to stop it, and you don't hear a lot on the news about it right now because there's so many things going on.
Right.
And
a new president in
right.
South Korea.
And, but
I mean, there's some issues.
If something happens as a result of these heightened tensions, you know, we might not be around
story.
To talk about it in
I didn't
years.
Know this, and I know that the Download Nation pays more attention than I do, but I didn't realize that Seoul, South Korea, mm-hmm. is very close to where some of these missiles are at.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, 40 miles, essentially like Naperville to Chicago.
Yeah.
And that's the part of geography. I'm like, whenever I say nuclear tests and things like that, you're
you
like,
don't
nah.
know the terrain of,
yeah,
of
I don't
South
know the,
Korea?
I don't know the terrain of the demilitarized zone.
I don't think the president does either.
Yeah. I'm not running for president. But I mean, that's startling to think about, and that's what makes it so tough. They can't just do what they do in Afghanistan where they drop bombs and try to blow up factories like we saw with Saddam Hussein, because mm-hmm. you're talking about, you know, 40 miles away mm-hmm. For them to retaliate, and that's where there's a real concern about, you know, casualties.
And the state-run media in Pyongyang, it said today that the U.S. is bringing the region to the brink of nuclear war. Have you ever watched their state-run media? It's, there's a lady on there. She wears a pink suit. It's the most fascinating thing. Go to YouTube and watch it. But she said today in North Korea that we're on the brink.
And they blame they're pushing a story about the CIA, and I think it was South Korea, that put an assassination attempt on Kim Jong-un mm-hmm. 2 years ago. And that's where this all comes from. So it's just like, you're absolutely right, Randy. We are not paying attention. I mean, 2 weeks ago, we were talking aircraft carriers mm-hmm. and people going to area. And now because
we've
of other
on.
Things, we've
mm-hmm.
moved on.
It's true.
And the North Korea has not moved on, though. And I don't know. I think that I'm nervous.
Randy.
I'm sorry. I think that country is scary.
All right, Kevin, what do you got for a story you're going to remember?
You know, I'm just going to roll it back because it's been too much of a deluge this entire weekend, so the Comey stuff is just too much to get
past. Do you think that in 500 years this will be? Remember when that story impeached the president?
Yeah. I wouldn't go that far, but you know, there's all the rumblings now just about before I came in here, I was watching some of the town halls that were happening. They just citizens approaching the representatives and being like, if you're going to impeach Clinton for this and that, like, why aren't you impeaching Trump? But, you know, the Comey stuff, just the actual lack of self-awareness that Trump has and the shock that he had over the fact that he fired the man in charge of the investigation to his ties in Russia and he's surprised by it. It's just, it's unreal.
Yes, that's definitely a front runner for one that we will remember. Although every week it seems to be something else.
Yep.
I will say I've got two. One, the redevelopment of the North Branch of the Chicago River. The plans came out this week, and not much short on funding. Mm-hmm. But the plan, if you go online and you look at the what they want to do to the river up to, I guess it would be past North Avenue, it's
it's wild.
It is wild. I mean, I was on Halsted and Division today, where the river hits right there at the bridge that they had just spent money on to do that bridge. It's all electrical.
Mm-hmm.
It's barren. There's not much. I mean, the land there is not used for anything.
It's true.
If you turn that into a bike walk, not unlike what the 606 extends to the New York, forget the High Line, like the concept of creating a space along the river there, I think you're going to drastically change north side of Chicago in 15, 50 years from now.
I mean, it's great. Like I'm a cyclist. I go up to the North Branch Trail often, and you know, I live in Avondale, and the talk of connecting up by Superdog, like all the way. I mean, it's
on its way.
Yeah.
Right. Awesome. Because to get that trail, if you live in the center of the city, you know, I'm going back and forth like this on my bike to get to that trail.
Yeah, it's a lot of work just to get to the trail.
I just think Elston, it's not very scenic.
Make no small plans. And
I disagree.
We make a lot about burn and plan and everything that happened, but this plan, I mean, it's pretty exceptional when you look at what they want to do to the north side of Chicago and how it would change the makeup of where a lot of people live. So it'll be interesting, I think, in a couple of years. The second thing I have and the last thing we'll end on, today was Mitchell Trubisky's first practice as a Chicago Bear.
You guys still care about that guy.
He was on the quarterback of the future, was drafted number two, and he had his first practice. So in 100 years, Bears fans would be like, remember Trubisky?
Wow. How did it go?
I think he threw 10 passes and he was pretty accurate.
Okay.
You guys,
that trade was a good idea.
Of something new.
I'm just saying, man, in 500 years, it'd be like, they'll be calling it Trubisky Go. Not Chicago. It'd be something different.
I'm rooting for the Bears.
There you go. Kevin Warwick is associate editor at the Chicago Reader. Randy Bellisoma, reporter here at WGN-TV. You guys, great segment tonight. Thanks so much for being here.
That was fun.